Business Administrator Derek Love. So welcome to our board meeting. We'll begin by standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a presentation first off by Kylie Christensen, Bureau of Fatalities, University of Utah.
We just had it up and it decided to move over.
Always.
You want to move to the next one and we'll be playing with this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go ahead with the consent agenda, the warrants, the minutes for June 2017, and the financial reports for June 2017. Are there any questions?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Personnel action, James, for approval?
Yes, I have several names that I would recommend for approval. They are as follows: Jay Howard, Emory High School Assistant Football Coach; Tony Edgehouse, Emory High Assistant Volleyball Coach; Lexi Rich, Huntington Elementary 3-Hour Aide; Joy Bloomer, Emory High Child Nutrition Program Part-Time; Hillary Herdsman, Emory High CNP Part-Time; Kara Jenkins, Farron Elementary CNP Part-Time; Katie Duncan, San Rafael Junior High CNP Part-Time. That would be San Rafael Middle School now. And also Talina Labrum, Emory High School Boys Head Cross Country Coach; Bracey Citrud, Emory High School Assistant Tennis Coach; and Travis Olson, Green River High School Full-Time Fine Arts and PE Teacher. That position is filled now. Also, notification that we have resignations: Holly Smith, CNP part-time worker, and Jack Butler, part-time custodian. I would recommend board approval on each of those employees.
Okay, any discussion on that?
I move that we approve them.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Let's go to policy actions. JLCB, administrating of medicine to students.
Yes, I gave you a copy of that last board meeting, the proposed amendment to our existing policy, and I've asked Lori Tuttle to come tonight to present briefly what all of that means, and if you have questions about the administration of these medications for opiate overdoses, I think she'd be able to answer those. Right, Lori?
Sure.
Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Basically, I just want to tell you, we'll be getting the Narcan, and we'll go ahead and do it from two different places. The first comes from the National School Nurse Association. They came out in favor for Narcan in schools as part of their emergency preparedness and action plan. It's just saying we need to be prepared for any type of emergency. So it actually falls under the same type of plans as EpiPen, having epinephrine in the schools for emergencies with anaphylaxis shock. Then they have Narcan for these type of emergencies. I know it's kind of different, but they recommended that. So they have a program where we can get Narcan for our two high schools, and along with that, they provide training videos and resources that I can train those in the schools. So then for the rest of the schools, the health department has the Narcan for those, and then I'll be doing the training, hopefully the same people that were training for all the other meds, the EpiPens, and keep them kind of in line. So if it's something that we go with, that's kind of where we'll be getting it. Going to the school nurse conferences this year, most districts in the state are either working on policy, a few have started to get it, just with legislation changing that we can have it in the schools, most are going that way. So it's something that if you give and it wasn't needed, it's not going to hurt them. You know, I think sometimes we have people in the community that that come to events that we might need to use it for. I hope we never True. Have to, but it comes from all walks of people. A lot of times we think of just the addicts, but it's people with chronic pain and new pain that don't understand the medication sometimes. So that's where we'd be getting it from if we go with that. Do you guys have any questions?
Is this a nasal spray in every
so
case?
So that'll be the nasal spray. There's actually two per kit because sometimes you get one and then you may have to get another one before the ambulance gets there. But that's part of the training. So it'll be recognizing and responding and then how to give it and some documentation.
And it's supplied through the
Yeah, so it's free. All of them except the two high schools that will get through the School Nurse Association. Just they have really good training with it, so we wanted to be able to, and that's free also. So.
Okay,
what kind of spray is it? Is it like a Flonase?
Just have to put a part together and push it up, and it all goes in one nostril. So it's actually easier to give than the shot, so it should be
more user friendly. Yeah, but
that shot's fun. It's a pilot shot.
But you're not getting it.
You're not getting it. So the health department has those grants. They thought that they would have them. They can't with our county rates. We should have them for quite a while, so hopefully if they expire, they should just continue. We should be able to get them free. So. Yeah.
Great.
What's the shelf life of them?
I don't know for sure, actually. I'll have to find that out.
I'm sure.
At least a year, I'm sure.
Right. But you keep track of them.
Yeah, so yeah, we have
so
track
not
them.
A problem.
Okay. Well, with that, I would recommend that.
And I'll make that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thanks, Lori.
And you don't have to stick around. You're welcome to. It's really fun.
Oh, the fun's just getting
it's
started.
It's just really fun.
You're rearing up now.
It's the most fascinating thing you'll ever do in your life.
GCO, Evaluation of Professional Staff Amendment.
Yes, this also was distributed in the last board meeting, and there was a wording issue that's been corrected.
Okay.
So I will give you a revised copy of that. And this is stemming from new state law on evaluations necessitating amendments to our existing policy, minor amendments, rather than two evaluations a year. In some cases, it's been minimized to one for all professional employees. Even new teachers, that's one of the main ones. But if you have any questions about the amendments on that policy, I'd be happy to address those. The main thing that we're continuing to work on, and this is part of our negotiations with the professional association, has to do with the procedures. And that's not necessarily detailed in policy, but we're trying to tighten those up so they're a little bit more user-friendly with our teachers. We're also assessing our evaluation tool, and we're also in the process of creating our own stakeholder survey. We have been using one out of the University of Utah over the last 2 years, but we think that we can do one that is as effective and much less expensive.
Right.
So. If you have no questions, then I would recommend that the board approve these amended changes to existing policy.
Okay, any discussion on that?
Okay. I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? JFC, Dropout Prevention Recovery.
Yes, this also was presented in the last board meeting for your review. This is legislation that came out in 2016 that needs to be implemented going into this new school year. And the policy requires school districts to have procedures in place to identify students who are at risk of dropping out, to create plans to prevent that student from dropping out, even altering schedules and by any other means possible to help the students to stay in school. It even deals with students who have dropped out of school, strategies to bring them back in so that they can complete their high school diplomas.
Hey, are there any discussions on that?
One thing I wonder is, what's the EDB up here? Is that where the policy number is supposed to be, or the lettering, the policy?
Yes, that was on there from the model that came from the Utah School Boards Association.
It's actually JFC.
Yeah.
Our code will be JFC.
That needs to be updated.
Okay.
I should have eliminated that, but that's why that's there.
Okay, I move that we approve this.
That's a good policy.
Yep.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? JICKA, Emergency Safety Interventions, Restraint, and Seclusion.
Yes, Ryan Mon worked on this. Maybe you could give us a brief overview of that, and if you have any questions, maybe direct those towards him.
Yeah, just with the change as far as seclusion and restraint of students, there's a requirement to have an emergency team. And that's why we tied with that. That was a little bit better. This addresses when you can and cannot restrain a student for what, and if you were to, the guidelines for that. It's something that we didn't have descriptive enough for state guidelines. That's nothing in there that's out of line. It's all state guidelines.
I have a question. It's very descriptive. How does this get disseminated to those who are going to implement something like this, possibly like teachers and so on?
So with those that have a student that may be subject to restraint that is identified that way, we have that team already in place. It's been used in Cottonwood, and they will provide the training, and we'll have the guidelines in that case. If there's something beyond that, if it's monetary damage, it's nothing. If they're harming themselves or others, that's a given, and that's where teachers will be aware of that. Everything else, we're looking at behavior training to start with administrators and a few trainers or a few individuals, and we'll spread that out to the schools.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Does this include preschool?
That's a good question. This is meant for school age, but yeah, because it's district policy.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
So preschool is included?
Yeah. Yes, it
was. Because they're under our housing.
Okay. Motion is in order for that, unless there's more.
I'll make a motion to approve. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And JKA, Corporal Punishment Amendment.
Yes, this also stems from new legislation that eliminates corporal punishment. We had existing policy on that. Ryan went in and eliminated those references to corporal punishment. It's not allowed under any circumstances now, so it's just tightening up that policy.
Okay, so I had a question on the statement that says an employee may not be subjected to any sanction for failure or refusal to commit an act prohibited by this policy.
Right.
Help me understand.
That's saying if that policy says you can't do it, and your administrator or somebody were to say you're going to do it, and you still refuse, you're protected in that case.
Okay.
So if it's not in compliance with the policy, you don't have to do it regardless of what your directive may be.
Okay. Okay. That's a good thing to clarify.
Yeah.
Seems simple enough, but I couldn't understand what that sentence meant.
That's good to clarify. Okay. Okay.
I move that we pass this policy.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Are you ready back there?
We sure are.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Good time.
Awesome. I know we'll switch and everyone gets to turn around. And yeah. Awesome. Thank you. So I'm Kylie with Zero Fatalities, and I contacted Ralph. And I asked if I could come speak to you guys quickly tonight about some of the programs that Zero Fatalities offers. Here in the state of Utah, Zero Fatalities is a UDOT and DPS program. So we travel literally throughout the entire state and talk about traffic safety. And the few short hours I've been in your community, I've been super impressed. I really like working with you guys. So hopefully we can get some more programs in here and see how we can help make everyone on Utah roads a little bit safer. So my question is, how many of you have actually heard of Zero Fatalities before? Okay, good. good amount. Where have you heard of us?
On the billboards everywhere.
The billboards? Okay, do you guys have the electronic billboards that you
That's
see?
Where I see it when we travel.
Okay, yeah. When you travel. I know, I think
we
right
have to go
pretty
to see any billboards.
Yeah? Okay, I was going to say, maybe you still like have some here. I don't know. Okay, awesome. For those of you that haven't seen a bus, I did put in one of our commercials. We've played it in a Megaplex theater recently, so you guys may have seen it, you may have not. That's okay.
Texting and walking at the same time? Not a smart idea. Texting and driving? That's just plain stupid. Put your cell phone away in the car.
So even though traffic safety is kind of a big deal, we like to, you know, put a little lighter spin on it. But my question is, how many of you think zero fatalities is actually a realistic goal? Not one hand.
Well, there's no other choice. I mean, you have to go with zero. That's what we want.
Sure.
You want to say five or 10?
Well,
we're good with
not
five.
Gonna work. I totally
Seven
understand
and a half
your line
is
of
acceptable.
I will be in a room full of 300 students and parents, and I won't get one hand. I plan on that. I usually don't get very many. But when we are coming up with our program, Zero Fatalities, we of course think, just like you guys, that's a great goal, but we wanted to ask some community members up in Salt Lake. So you can tell it's quite an old video. We filmed it about 13 years ago. And we just went around to people and we said, how many deaths do you think here are in Utah? And then kind of the question I asked you, is it realistic? So here's some of their responses.
In the U.S.?
Sure.
A lot.
10,000?
Five.
Some
many
thousands?
Probably around 10.
Mm. 10,000. That's way more than that. Yeah, about 15.
Well, 5,000 was a lot. I don't know, 20,000 people?
Alcohol?
Driving with their phones?
Speeding.
Speeding? Driving drunk?
I would say people are really busy in their lives these days. They get completely distracted. We're on our cell phones. I don't leave home without it. And you just get busy and you just, you know, you look up too quickly and are not quick enough. And
not even distractions, not paying attention to the radio, CDs, music, iPods, cell phones, things like that. Things that create a distraction.
Distracted driving. That's probably it, distracted driving.
I'm not sure. Well, yeah, I seem to see a lot of cars, like, with police. Where I come from, there's not as many crashes.
It's just not possible.
It's not even really a possibility from a mathematical point of view. There's always going to be somebody who does something wrong. It's just nature.
No. Why not? Too many distractions, too much drunk driving, things like that.
I don't know.
Sure, if we lose all of our gas supply. Probably not. It'll probably get worse.
A realistic goal would be,
like I said, it was old.
Probably,
50,000.
Oh, that's a hard one for me.
10% of it. To be of any kind of realistic goal, 10%.
At least reduce it by half, in my eyes. I mean, that would be a good, you know, short-term goal.
10% would be an ultimate goal.
You know, I think one that would reach goals around well under 100. I think that would be something that's reachable.
Well, none is really acceptable, but if you're setting a goal, probably see if you could, like, half it or something.
Okay. So clearly, we asked a lot of people the same question, kind of like I asked you today. But my question is, with zero fatalities, that really is our goal. So what if our program was fewer is always better? Then it would be 125. That would be our number. Because last year we lost 280 lives on Utah Road. So this would be huge. But then what if I were to say, you know what, five? Five, because nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect, so five is a pretty good number. The problem with that line of thinking is, to everybody else in this room, to me, you are that other person. So now that we're taking this goal personally, what's the only number of acceptable deaths for you and your family?
Zero.
Zero, right? We ask the same question to those exact same individuals, and every single one of them, without question, said zero. It's a very simple number. So that is our goal, zero fatalities. Approximately 33,000 people died in car crashes last year. So you can tell some people were like kind of in the ballpark. I think that one girl said about 20,000. But some people, what, said 5,000? 33,000 people last year. That is so many people. That's almost 100 people every single day. That is a 747 going down every single week. That would not be acceptable at all. And for those ages 5 to 34, every single student that you have, whether that's preschool, elementary, high school, whatever it may be, they fall into this category. Motor vehicle crashes are the leading cause of death. And not just like top 5, top 10, no. Number one. The number one killer for this age group that we see on our roads. But I also want to talk about this. You'll notice in the video that we filmed, a lot of people say, oh yeah, not even possible. But 94% of all crashes are due to human error. So you'll notice through my entire presentation, I will never say accident, because we see very few accidents on our roadways. Road conditions, whether these are not causing our crashes, but we are. So the behaviors that we all need to work on to prevent those crashes are these: drowsy driving, distracted driving, aggressive driving, impaired driving, and not buckling up. In the video, a lot of people said that distracted driving was the number one killer on Utah roads. So I want to ask you the same question. Which one out of these five takes the most lives out of Utah almost every single year?
Distracted.
Okay. Out of all those five behaviors, the last one I heard was the right answer. Not buckling up. 86 people in 2015 and 2016 decided they did not need to put on their seatbelt. And according to your specific county, your community, in 2016 you had 5 fatalities. Out of all of our serious injury, 11. Our crashes, 74. 5. That is a low number. Obviously still not acceptable, but you can do it. I go to counties and their numbers can reach up to 100. 5. 5 people within your community last year lost their lives because of a traffic fatality of some sort, and we can fix it. I know we can. Zero fatalities. This entire summer, we are going around to every single county in the state of Utah and sharing our campaign. It's 100 deadliest days. We see here in Utah the most traffic fatalities between Memorial Day and Labor Day. If you really think about it, a lot of people will say, well, what about the winters? We have so much snow on our roads. We actually see more crashes in the wintertime, but more fatalities in the summer. People are traveling from city to city. They're going to the lake. They're going on vacation. We have an increase of aggressive speeds because they think the weather's fine. The weather's perfect for me to drive. So this summer, like I said, every community, that's why I'm here today. Now you're thinking, okay, I get the program, I get what I can do, but how can I help? The first thing is to share the message. Please, go home tonight and buckle up. Tell someone you love to buckle up. Put their cell phone down, not drive aggressive. There's so much you can do. But more importantly, we want a partnership with you guys. Out of all of the programs that we have at Zero Fatalities, they are free resources to you and your community. This right here is a list of every single program that we have within Zero Fatalities. The first two, Zero Fatalities and Don't Drive Stupid, those are team programs. So what we do is we actually go around to high schools in the state of Utah and we present to new teen drivers and their parents. We call it our parent night presentation. We see a huge impact when we have our parents attend these presentations with their teens. Their teens, they know these laws that they need to follow, and they know what they need to do behind the wheel, But sometimes these parents don't really know. They say, oh yeah, we'll teach you how to drive later. Oh, you'll learn in a few years. You'll get the hang of it. But we see with parent involvement, teens are half as likely to speed, 70% less likely to drink and drive, 2 times more likely to wear a seatbelt, and 30% less likely to talk on a cell phone while driving. These are huge improvements. And for any of you that have had teens go through driver's ed, you guys know that we have graduated driver's license laws. Laws that teens need to follow once they get their license. So like I said, sometimes these parents, they have no idea about these laws, or they don't enforce them in their home. But since we've seen these GDL laws enacted here in the state of Utah, teen fatalities have gone down by 62%. So clearly they're working. So that's why we go to these high schools. We want to talk to these parents, get a communication flow going between their students and their teens to make sure that they are driving safe behind the wheel. Part of the presentation, we share stories. Stories of individuals that have lost their lives here in the state of Utah. We also have what we call a teen memoriam. Each year, the zero fatalities, we team up with the health department, and we create a book just like this. And it's families that have lost their teen for a traffic fatality of some way or another. And in fact, just last year, we had Caitlin, who lived in Price, her family came and shared their story with us. They came, and we actually had a press event in Salt Lake, and I remember meeting her family, and they brought some stuff that was Caitlin's favorite things to do. And they wanted to simply share her message. And a short little part of it says, the driver of the vehicle has swerved to miss a deer, and the vehicle rolled over into the road into a riverbed. Caitlin was not wearing a seatbelt. She was ejected from the truck and killed instantly. She later goes on to share why every single person needs to buckle up. So I know many of you are thinking, oh, well, that doesn't affect my community. That doesn't affect us. I understand that this is Carbon. I understand that it's Price. Literally 30 minutes away. I'm sure.
She moved to Carbon from past the bill.
She did?
Shortly before that.
Okay. I did not know that. Many of you know Caitlin. Know her family. Probably remember that exact day that her mom shares in that story. She's told me so many times that story, and it gets me every time. Simply. She says she always wore her seatbelt. Her family always told her to buckle up. But yet that one time she didn't put it on is when we were in a crash, unfortunately. We share these stories in our presentation. Just like you guys, I can tell how impactful it is for you. We share these with our teens. When we're out in the community, we share stories that, you know what, really do hit close to home. Along with some of the activities that we do as a presentation, we also have different activities that can be done within the high school. This is Harriman High School we went to in March, and we did a driving safe week. So each one of the days, the 5 days, we had one of our five behaviors. Here, the school district actually created this spin wheel that they could go, and we would give them statistics to see if they could answer it correctly and then win something in the end. Here is a pledge for them to not drive distracted. So we had a big poster created, and then they used their thumbprint. So they got red ink, gave us our thumbprint, and that was their promise and pledge to not drive distracted. And then the last one, we had our fatal vision goggles, our beer goggles that we used as an activity to show impaired driving. There's so many simple ways to make sure that these teens understand the consequences, negative and positive, that they can have behind the wheel. We also have another program that can be tailored to our younger audiences, which are all of our pedestrians, our young kids riding a bike, maybe a scooter, or even our teens that are riding a motorcycle to school. Here's one of our videos.
Heads up, Utah. Did you know that nearly one-third of fatal crashes on our roads involve people who aren't even in a car? Because they're smaller and more difficult to see, motorcyclists, bicyclists, and pedestrians are at higher risk when out on our roads, especially at intersections. So, no matter how you're getting around, be alert and watch for other people using our roadways. When we all work together, we can reach zero fatalities.
One of my favorite things is to go into the community and talk to young kids that are on a bike, that are walking to a friend's house, and ask them, how do you know that a driver can see you? Or when you are on your bike, what is that one thing that you put on to make sure that you're safe? So we talk about any audience that we can, but more importantly, we also like to talk about the audiences that are walking, whether that's you guys. How many of you are pedestrians, right? Every single one of us at some point or another. And here's one of my favorite videos that we just created.
Thank you.
get out of the mind how many times I was a pedestrian and I was not properly reflected. So in fact, we created these small light up bracelets that we give to our young kids in elementary school. They said we can have them put them on a wrist or a helmet or even a bike or backpack. So when they are walking in the early mornings or late at night, going to school, coming home from a friend's house, that drivers can see them a little bit better. So that's just a small little segment of what we do. The next thing that I love talking about as well is our Clickit Club. So these students here are from a local high school, and what they did is they went to an elementary school, almost as a peer-to-peer program, and they did a Clickit Club. And what that is, young teens come, talk to the kids about proper fit of a seatbelt, why they should be in a seatbelt, maybe even a booster seat, and then we actually give them these small medallions here, you can see these stickers as well, and they are Clickit Cadets. So we say, hey, when you're in a vehicle, you need to be that officer. Be like the officers that we see helping you every day to make sure that every single person is buckled up. So whether this is a PTA or a teacher that wants to share the message, even a high school kids that want to go to an elementary school, we can help facilitate that. We can make sure that this program is consecutively run, that there's different programs within it so that everybody can drive home safe. The last portion I want to share with you is just some of the quick videos that we share during our presentations, whether that's going around to local businesses, or specifically we share all of these videos when we are presenting to our high schools. So this is my favorite section, of course, not being buckled up. I love to talk to people and see why they put it on, maybe why they don't put it on. So in fact, a few years ago, we did a focus group and we asked people, well, we call them our non-seatbelt users, hardcore non-seatbelt users. And we asked them, tell me why you don't put on your seatbelt. So here are some of their responses.
I feel that I should be told what I have to do or not.
Uh-huh.
Especially in a vehicle.
Yeah. It's kind of your own, should be your own decision.
Yeah. I mean, that goes like if you're smoking in your vehicle, or you want to turn up your radio loud, which I don't want to do.
I know, because if I was to get in a wreck, there was a chance that I could live by being thrown from the car than if I was stuck in my seatbelt.
My real problem is just I get in my car and I go. I don't think about putting it on. I don't see a need to have it on unless I see a threat that would put me in a situation where, you know, I'm going through my windshield. So I just don't feel like I need to put it on.
So, of course, we hear a lot of excuses in the community. People come up and say, oh, yeah, I put it on. Or the next one will say, you know what, I don't put it on because of this or this. So in this portion, I like to talk about some of those excuses. They may be reasons to them why they don't put it on, I get it, but they're excuses to me. Why somebody simply did not take 2 seconds to put on their seatbelt. Well, here in the state of Utah, in fact, we have a law, it's called our primary seatbelt law, excuse me. And what it is, officer, you're driving down the road, simply say you're not in a seatbelt and cite you just for that. We love this law. We fought very hard for this law because we know that seatbelts save lives. Although, like I said, I still have people in the community tell me no, tell me they don't put it on. But my question is, let's say you're in a vehicle and you have your seatbelt on, you are making the right choice, as you believe, but somebody else says, oh, you know what, it's my choice. It's my choice not to put on my seatbelt.
This is Michael. Today he's going to hit his girlfriend so hard she ends up with permanent brain damage.
Vehicle. The
drive
is critical. They say the guy without the seatbelt did the damage.
No seatbelt, no excuse. From DOE.
How many of you ever thought of seatbelts like that? I never did. I thought, of course, I wear my seatbelt because I want to be safe. Oh, but you? You don't have to. But it's everybody's choice in the vehicle to be safe, which means every single person needs to be buckled up. We didn't create this video, but we did create this one. You may have seen it a few years ago.
Sam looks like he's sleeping, but he's not. He's not thinking. He's not breathing. He's dead. He was in a crash, but the twist is, that didn't kill him. His unbuckled parent did by flying into the backseat of the car after the impact.
If you hop in a vehicle with all of your family members, and there's one person that is not in a seatbelt, they increase the injury or death rate in a crash by 40%. So please, if you're the person that says, I'm not going to wear my seatbelt, but please wear your seatbelt for someone else. This here is a simulated rollover. The vehicle is traveling at 43 miles per hour. The dummies inside are average weight and average height. I like to talk to people about this video that say they would rather be ejected from the vehicle, like that young woman said. These dummies don't decide where they go, what lands on them, how high they go. Some of them are actually partially ejected and then thrown back into the car. Statistically, we know that 3 out of 4 people that are ejected will actually die of their injuries. The last excuse I hear often is from young teens, and actually pretty young kids, and they'll say, you know, I'm not going very far, and I'm not going very fast.
We're devoting part of this week to encourage every Utahn to buckle up. Make it a habit, because you'll see in this next story, it doesn't matter how slow you're going, a crash can still be fatal if you're not wearing a seatbelt.
I distinctly remember the, do you want to drive? Do you want me to drive? I mean, everyone has that conversation when you're going somewhere together. And I said, oh, no, it's okay, I'll drive.
Jamie Dangerfield and her best friend, Chelsea Hill, had been inseparable since childhood. They couldn't have imagined that night they'd be separated by a split-second decision.
Like they say, it really does just happen so fast.
As they turned into a parking lot going just 5 miles an hour, a car hit them from behind and caused their SUV to roll.
We did an interview with Chelsea's dad, and he said, you can save your life with that one little... Chelsea, and they were traveling, going straight into a parking lot, and somebody came up behind them. 5 miles per hour, in fact, they were 3 miles from home. That vehicle rolled, and Chelsea was ejected through the sunroof. She did not have her seatbelt on. We're going to make sure that everyone buckles up in the car every ride for the entire ride. After each one of our behaviors, we share these tips. We share these tips to not only just do education and show them videos, but to give them physical things that they can do on their way home. Always use a lap and shoulder belt properly. The seatbelt is actually designed to sit for an adult male. So please wear that from your shoulder to hip. Don't ever take the shoulder belt and put it behind your back. I love talking to kids about this because they finally understand why. They understand why their mom and dad are telling them, please don't do that. If you were to take that shoulder belt, that leaves just the lap belt. In a crash, you could fold in half so violently you break your back. If you were to take the shoulder belt and put it under your arm, which many young kids do because the seat belt is not fitting them correctly, that goes across their vital organs. We know that they cannot take the crash forces like their shoulder and their hips can, so please wear it correctly. Don't get comfortable. Don't put your feet up on the dash. That airbag can come out at 200 miles per hour. When you are driving, you are the boss. I love sharing this tip with my teens because they want their friends in the car when they can have them in there. And I tell them, please establish a rule that before any of your friends even step foot in the car, that they will buckle up. But even if you are just a passenger, whether that's a teen I'm talking to or you guys, please speak up. Have that courage to say, you know what? I really want you to put on your seatbelt. Please wear it for me. The last video I want to share with you, I know many of you are not in a high school, but how many of you have had young teens go through driver's ed, or go through high school, okay? A few of you.
It only takes 1 second to tell someone you love to buckle up.
Buckle up, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, buckle up. My daughter only dates responsible young men. Are you a responsible young man, Chris? Are you?
Dad! You are so embarrassing!
Oh, isn't prom night exciting?
Mom!
So if you can't get the teens to buckle up, just try that and see how it goes. So, do you guys have any questions so far? Or not so far, I'm done, but so far. So I did bring some of our incentive items that you guys can see and also take home or even use in your classroom if you have enough. I love to give these pencils. They're actually color-changing pencils. Kids love them. And we also give them our pledge books. So it's actually a post-it note. So we want to tell them, hey, you know what? If you know someone that you love and you want them to put their seatbelt on, go home and write them a note and have them buckle up. So we have some of the notebooks here that you guys can take home and use, put them in your office. And then just a bunch of different incentive items. We have our pens that we use, some chapstick that we give around to local community members. So I'll just, I guess, pass that around and take whatever you want. And then I'll leave those here. I also do have some of the light-up wristbands. So if you guys are walking your dog, going on a walk, I have a bag that I'll leave here. And the last thing is I have a list of kind of our programs. If you're kind of wondering, oh, I saw some up there that you did talk about because I don't want to take all night. So this is actually a list that just gives a small description of the program. So if you know anybody within the school, whether that's elementary, middle, high school, that you think they would want to use this, even in their classroom or an assembly or some type of activity within the school, this will kind of give you a good idea. So I'll leave those ones here. And then, yes, any questions about our programs or what we have? Anything? Yes.
Do you have plans to come to the MA district schools this year?
So this is kind of why I came to the school district, because I think it's best if I can reach all of you guys and you can kind of take it to school that you find fitting. So I would be more than welcome and happy to come to school starting this August. It's just a matter of you guys telling me, yep, come and talk to our kids. So, simple as that.
Okay. Well, thank you for
your
information.
Yes, no problem. And I'll leave all
resources.
Of that. Somewhere.
Appreciate your presentation.
Okay.
Thank you. We're going to buckle up tonight for sure, all of us. So thank you.
You can dispense this in schools now.
Safe
trip
home.
But can you give it to a student if they need it?
We have updated job descriptions for school food services.
Did we do the bullying
policy? Oh, did we do the bullying?
I don't think we did.
Did we miss
it? I don't remember now.
I think it's not on there.
It's not
on
there.
It's
an
action item.
Okay.
I think it's one of Larry's discussion items.
Yeah, it's on there for information.
Okay. Job description for school food services.
We've been working for a few months to update these job descriptions. We really haven't had specific job descriptions that pertain to the levels of employment that we have in the child nutrition program. So we've been working to get those up to date. We have currently in the program three, I guess you'd say, levels of employees, a worker and more of a lead worker within a school setting, and then a manager who has supervisory responsibilities. And so we've designed these job descriptions to apply to how the program is today instead of, I don't know, 30 or 40 years ago. I'm not sure when the last job descriptions were updated. Janine and I worked primarily on the job descriptions, and then we asked some of our child nutrition employees to review them and had some feedback from that. And so the ones that you have reflect that process, I guess.
And they felt like that would work for them, the ones that you talked to in the program itself,
yeah,
that actually work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that looked like a great idea to have that in writing. So do you need our approval for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any discussion on it? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Approval of negotiated items with the MA Extension Association and the MA Classified Association.
And there's one sheet for each group. I suppose you could approve them together if you want to, but these are just the kind of a more formal outline of the topics that we discussed and agreed upon. There are some, maybe it's worth mentioning, with the licensed, we will still be in the process. I know Superintendent has mentioned this, of reviewing teacher evaluation system and instrument. And then with the classified, we have a couple of items that we would be still working on, which are number of summer days that secretaries need per school, and then computer lab aid positions and what the appropriate grade is for them. So we'll be researching and studying those and arrive at a conclusion sometime in the near future, but we just put those as kind of contingent items on the agreement, and then we'll resolve those a little bit later.
Great. Appreciate all of those, the view that served on those committees to bring that about. Any discussions or any concerns?
I had a question because this didn't come up in negotiations about the activity pass that we did last year.
Yeah, we're going to continue that.
Yeah, we're going to continue it, but I was just wondering what the effects of it were to the bottom line for the sports organizations and so on.
And you were probably in the classified, I'm guessing, because we did in the license group talk about it. But anyway, I don't have the numbers with me, but the cost of it was a few thousand dollars. I'm thinking total $6,000 or $7,000. And that was in reimbursing schools for the cost of admission for our employees for however many went in. And the schools get those amounts by program so that they can receive them back into the program. And that was about what we had anticipated it would cost. And in our discussion, we felt like it was worth that amount of money for the morale and the positivity of doing something like that.
What about the manpower? Is that a lot of work for...
There was a little bit of adjustment. The hardest part is that a lot of times we have people, employees taking tickets at the games who don't really know the program. But the secretaries, Paula and Sherry, I think learned this year, you know, what they need to instruct so that it's done. But they both said there were a few little issues during the year, but nothing major, and they don't expect it to be a big deal. We have the forms worked out, and we can print out the cards easily. We just do those with a vendor, and they ship them to us. And it's the first year was more work than it will be going forward.
Okay. JR, do you have a question?
Okay. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, a motion is in order to approve both the classified and the education associations. Negotiations.
I'll make a motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Let's go to the business administrator's report, Jared.
Let's see, just one second. Okay. Tracy, you seconded that?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we do all, so whoever you want right now.
All right. I wasn't looking, so.
There was a second, then a third.
All right. Okay. We approved the budget at last board meeting, and we've got that implemented and reported to the state and the state auditor and state board and everybody who needs that. So I think we're good there. Had business administrator summer meetings, and we did get some information on the salary schedule restructuring that's happened in some districts throughout the state. So we'll be able to have some good discussions about that. Throughout this upcoming year, I think the idea was we'll put together a committee and study that out and figure out what the right direction is. So do have that information, and right now we're just doing tons of reports and getting ready for the next school year. So.
Great.
Plus, any of you has any questions, that's all I have to
say. Okay, thanks. Okay, Superintendent.
Yes, thank you. Some additional recognition has come our way, specifically to the business department. I did include a copy of a letter that I received from Todd Bukema from the Government Finance Officers Association. I would like to read for the record the opening paragraph of that. We're pleased to notify you that your comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal year ended 2016 qualifies for GFOA's Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. The Certificate of Achievement is the highest form of recognition in governmental accounting and financial reporting, and its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by a government and its management. So congratulations to the business department, Jared, Jack, Carrie.
Have a little chair here. Yeah.
And Carrie.
It's really not me.
It's not here.
Yeah. Well, as well as school secretaries
right.
as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a group effort for sure.
So we've come to expect these things, Jared, as you know. So well, thank you for your dedication to our school district.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Jared, you got to be smiling when they're taking
pictures. Now, I want to discuss that picture of me that was in the paper last time.
Your back was to it.
No.
He's got bright rosy cheeks.
There you go. That's better.
Here, do you want to hold this letter?
Can we do a photo? Yeah, no. Can we do a photo shoot another time, Patsy? Sorry.
Can we all be there?
Oh, dear.
Pulling okay. faces in the back.
You've entered celebrity status.
Yeah.
Okay, now back to business. I have also several items under enclosures, reports, and follow-up, starting with juvenile justice. In the last meeting, I gave you a summary report of how youth court works, and it looked quite promising for our school district as we deal with the juvenile justice amendments. At the superintendent's conference at the end of June, we talked at great length about the juvenile justice amendments. School districts across the state are struggling with exactly how to meet the new requirements and dealing with lesser offenses without referring them to juvenile court. One significant change to youth courts, I don't know who authorized it. There's legislation that authorizes youth courts, but some entity has changed the framework so that a youth court can no longer require a student defendant to enter a guilty plea before allowing that student to appear before youth court. That was a big selling point with me, because that eliminated a youth court from having to determine innocence or mm-hmm. guilt. With that gone, I'm not comfortable at all going that direction. So we are re-examining this. We spent a lot of time this week dealing with exactly what we can do. One of the problems we're up against is schools right now are in the process of getting their documents ready for registration, including their student handbooks, which need to be amended because of the new laws. So we're working with our principals. We are working with secretaries in getting that information as accurate as we possibly can without really knowing exactly what we're going to do ultimately. We have another superintendent's meeting next week in Cedar City. The superintendents in our last meeting requested, if not demanded, that the state office give us direction on this. Mm-hmm. Law goes into effect August 1st. School starts a couple of weeks after that, and districts are really at a loss as to what to do. Even the biggest school districts that have far more resources mm-hmm. than we have. So right now, that's in a state of limbo. We'll continue to work on it. I have a little bit more to report in closed session on the legalities that we're facing. But it's in a state of flux right now. The second item, rural schools, that was held last week. We had 54 employees attend. I believe that's a record high. We did offer scholarship to some of our participants. We had at least two teachers and an administrator from every school in our district. We placed high emphasis on it because the focus of rural schools last week was on professional learning communities, which we launched last year and will continue to hone that in our schools this year. It's embedded now, and we need to sustain it. So we appreciate the participation and reports I got back from participants were very favorable, and I think those who were there learned a lot more about professional learning communities and also about how those can be organized on a school level, even in small schools like ours. So that was very encouraging. Report on our schools now, and I did add an addendum to the updated packet I gave you today, and that's just a list of hearings on the Our Schools Now initiative. The sponsors of that initiative thought they had met the requirements for public hearings, but they did not. So they had to put together another set of hearings. Unfortunately, those hearings are scheduled for tomorrow around the state. I'm going to try and go over to Moab to the one there. But FYI, for your use, if you would like to go to any, they already held some. There was one in Price, the first go around. They need to have those they need to have those hearings completed this month, and then they can start gathering signatures next month. And then if they get 113,000 valid signatures, then this can go on the ballot for 2018. USBA Leadership Academy registration, I talked about that last week. This is the sign up. If any of you would like to go, I'll just send this down the line. Write your name down on one of those board member lines. This is in September in Park City, USBA conference, fall conference. I think it's kind of a smaller version of the January conference that they do. So, equalization meeting report. This was kind of put together in short order. I did send out an email to all of you. I don't know if you all had a chance to see it or not, but we did hold a meeting July 7th. This was at the Service Center in Price. I appreciate Laurel and Tracy and Jared's attendance there. Emory District was very well represented. We also had representation from Senator Lincoln Fillmore. He's been the author of a lot of the equalization legislation, specifically in the last session, Senate Bill 80, that did not pass. He was there. Terry Shoemaker, the executive secretary from the Superintendents Association. Chris Watkins was not there, but she did have a member of her staff in that meeting. USBA President Mary Nielsen was in attendance, and also the Service Center Supervisor Scott Crane. We had an opportunity to present our unique set of circumstances here in Emory County. We are above the average in property tax collection, but that doesn't tell half the story of of what we experience here in our county financially. I think all of us representing Emory County had some very pointed argument as to why any form of equalization that would involve property tax would be devastating to our district. I think we made that point very clear. And I felt like Senator Fillmore was receptive. He was there not to try and push his legislation, but to really know what's going on in these counties. The four counties were represented, as I mentioned, the four school districts. But Emory County, of those four, would stand to be impacted most adversely through an equalization program. So In the end, he reported that he is going to introduce legislation for equalization coming up in this next session. What that's going to look like, we don't know. We had a taste of it in the last session. Hopefully it's not something like SB 80, which would take funding right from our WPU. But I'm going to keep you in contact with him. And I'm going to lobby in our interests, and I'm sure a lot of other people will as well. So, Laurel or Tracy or Jared, do you have anything to add to that report?
He just asked for a list of programs or demands that you get in rural schools that go directly. Is that something that we can do? Lists of, for instance, the mandate to do the evaluations and.
Yeah.
And certain things like that that is mandated through the state that puts a lot of undue hardship on our districts because
yeah.
we're short staffed. We
right.
have a business administrator. And I think
yeah.
we need to get that. Apparently that wasn't addressed by our USBA elected officials.
I did get
well.
A survey on that yesterday from the USBA asking for
Those
that
kind of
specific
questions.
Information.
Okay.
And
I saw. Is that the SurveyMonkey one?
Yes.
You know, I didn't think that it directly correlated that well to what.
It was
what
pretty simplistic, yeah.
Yeah, and I felt like that was not the way it was. But anyway, we need to give him a list of things that you could cut out on your end that put a lot of hardship on you, because he would like to give special.
Yeah, he was sympathetic to that, wasn't he?
He was. That was seemed like that was a
government
big concern.
Overload and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can certainly follow up with
okay,
that.
Okay, thanks.
Under action items, we went through the action items, but I do have some new policies. These are just for review. Give you a chance to read through those. We have a massive data governance plan. This is new policy. This stems from Senate Bill 102. Doug Johnson and Ryan Mann worked extensively on this. It's very detailed. It's very cumbersome. All of it is required. I would also add that those policies were vetted by our communication committee. We went through those in two separate committees and kind of honed those down. But they are detailed. Brian, do you have anything you'd like to say about that? Or you've been trying to put that out of your mind?
There is compliance we think we can be, what we understand.
Included in that is the password policy mm-hmm. as well. It's a separate policy, but it's all part of the same requirements. And I quite like the password policy. We've been kind of unfettered there, and we've been fortunate not to have a lot of issues related to passwords, but who knows what could happen. We needed that layer of protection and requirements of those who have access to student data. I know the state board is becoming more and more protective of student data and who has access to it. And part of that is protecting those passwords. So we've added that one as well. The bullying and hazing, this comes out of Senate Bill 161. And it just updates our bullying and hazing policy. In fact, it pretty much gutted one of those. Ralph worked on that. Ralph, do you have anything you want to say about?
There was some definitions that just a little bit different. It tries to make sure all the definitions match the current definitions from the state law. And there was a few things that needed to be added, cyberbullying and stuff like that, that was not in. Well, it technically was in one aspect, but it didn't really specify.
Yeah.
It's more clear now, and
yeah.
Just trying to match the state law on that. There's a lot of definition, differences in definitions need to be clarified.
And then the one that I've added since the initial bulletin deals with policies referencing juvenile court referrals. Not only do we have to update those school policies, but we have a lot of district policy that reference referrals to juvenile court that will no longer be valid under the amendments to the juvenile justice law. So we'll be scouring through our policies, cleaning that up for future presentation. Under board member committee involvement, we this one, technology committee, Roy is a member of that. We will be meeting August 9th here at the district office, and we will have our first draft of the five-year technology plan. We've received all the school plans. We've integrated those through subcommittees into a district plan, and we're going to go through that with the full committee. And we'll either continue to work on that, or we will present that to the board in the future for your consideration. The Human Sexuality Committee is not scheduled a meeting yet. Jed's been working on getting that organized. We appreciate Laurel's willingness to be part of that. STEM Ed and CTE Pathways Committee, Tracy and Kenzie are on that. We are continuing to organize that committee. I can report that year two of the STEM Ed grant has been approved. That was $85,000. So we'll be able to continue our robotics programs and actually grow those things in K through 12. So that's going very well. And I need someone to sit on a juvenile justice committee. This goes back to what I was talking about earlier with creating a task force. To really detail how we're going to manage not so much policy but the consequences for criminal action on school property. If any of you are interested in being on that committee, I would appreciate that.
I would be happy to go.
Thanks, Kenzie. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any public comments? None? Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I just think with that zero fatalities that each one of the schools need to see that presentation.
Thank you. That was a very good presentation, wasn't it? We'll see how that integrates into our curriculum. Appreciate that. Closed meeting items. Do we have those?
I have one regarding pending litigation.
Okay. So a motion is in order to go into closed meeting.
I'm going to go into meeting for litigation purposes.
Okay. Second, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed?
Oh.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
Yes, thanks for coming.
Appreciate that.